This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round one recap for this week's Valspar Championship. Joining me to break it all down, it's Kyle Porter, KP. Hello, sir.
What up? Back at it, another week. Post Players Championship, match plays next week, Masters in 3 weeks. A lot going on. It's
how
a lot
dare,
of fun.
How dare you not mention that next week is also the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship?
Well, I was getting there. You interrupted me, but I was gonna throw that out there.
Oh boy, what a day. Okay. Have you noticed how often, so you and I do this on Thursdays, and literally every Thursday, that man, Jordan Spieth, is in the mix. Have you noticed how frequently that happens?
Well, it happened at Sony. That was the first time. It happened at, was it Players or API?
What?
It was Players, right?
I think it was the Players.
Yeah, because we were like, I don't know.
We spent like 35 minutes on it. Yeah, that's right. But like, but even didn't he miss the cut once? Like he was like Sony. First round leader. Okay. So
he should have missed the cut at the Players.
It doesn't even matter how he ends up finishing. He's always the Thursday conversation with us.
Well, because he knows that I have to talk about it. So he's just giving us the goods. I don't know if we have his scorecard, but there we go, producer Josh. He putted out of his mind, Rick.
Yep.
4.2, 4.1, something like that. His best putting performance since round one, Colonial 2021. Here's the thing that's interesting to me, Rick. And he was talking about this afterward, and it is very pertinent to his game this week, but also like the Masters and everything that's coming up. He said the way – I'm paraphrasing, but he said the way that I've been putting – and the confidence that I have with my putter, it allows me to not have to kind of fire at pins. And he said, he gave an example of, I think it was the seventh hole on, maybe it was his seventh hole. I don't know if seventh hole on the course or seventh hole that he played, but he said, that's not a pin I should go after. And I have confidence now that I can two putt from 35 feet. So I just hit it to the middle of the green, take my two putt and move on. And he didn't say this, but the implication was that a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever, that he didn't have the confidence to do that. And so he was kind of ripping at some pins that he shouldn't have been and getting himself into trouble. I thought that was we were just talking about course strategy. I thought that was a really interesting sort of unintended benefit that you and I don't think about or talk about that often when we think about guys having confidence with their putter.
Yeah, that's when you hear the thing when they say, oh, you know, poor putting, it like has ramifications through the bag. Like that's a concrete example of it.
Yeah. Cause guys will get, especially guys that struggle with their speed some, and JT's called Spieth the best speed putter, I think ever. Like his speeds are so good, but when he's not confident with it, he's like, well, I can't be 60 feet away. Cause that's an auto three putt in his head. He's probably saying, so it's just, you know, somebody that whose speed is really, really good right now, I would say, is Max Homa. I mean, some of his speeds at the Players Championship last week, it was like, man, that's so good from like 40 feet, 50 feet, wherever. And it does. I mean, confidence is like so much of this, and it trickles down to the kind of the rest of your game.
Jordan Spieth, an opening 67 out in the morning. That's 4 under par, 4 birdies, 0 bogeys. He is one shot off the pace. We are being led here by Ryan Brem, who made an ace today, 66, Steven Yeager, 66, and Adam Schenck currently on his final hole of the day. If he makes par, he'll shoot a 66. We got a couple guys out there. The other big name from the early wave was Sam Burns, KP. Got off, shot out of a cannon this morning. Well, I guess a little bit. He makes bogey on his first hole of the day, birdies on his second and third holes of the day. He started on the back. He made the turn in 3 under, got another one at number one, gave a couple back coming in. But here's Sam Burns, a couple shots off the lead, going for the three-peat.
Yeah, you know, Brem was actually talking about him. Brem shot, what, 65?
Six.
Par 71. He said, because they asked him, he made the one, and they're like, hey, are you getting comfortable out here? You played great. He goes, no, nobody's comfortable out here, except for maybe Sam Burns, mm-hmm. who's going for his third victory in a row. So, yeah, good start for him. Burns has kind of low-key not been great so far this year. Let me see if I can pull up his.
Did you hear what he said afterwards?
I did not.
No, Sam Burns. We're coming full circle here. Sam Burns' driver failed the test at Riviera.
Oh, okay.
So he has been testing new drivers, and he said, I think he said today, I've just gotten comfortable with the new Callaway one. So this goes back to the conversation where Rory did not even want to subject himself or TaylorMade to that bad test. Sam Burns told us he got a bad test and his driver failed, so he had to switch drivers, and he was alluding to that being the reason for his struggles. Now, the stats might say things differently, but that is what Sam said.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So T11 at American Express, T6 at Phoenix. So that was good. Good numbers there. Cut at Riv, horrible driving accuracy. Cut at Bay Hill, horrible driving accuracy. And then T35 at the Players Championship. So he just, you know, he's somebody that we talk about this kind of lower end of the Ryder Cup team. Or I talk about this. I don't know if we talk about this.
You rant about it and I nod along.
Yeah, we talk about the lower end of the Ryder Cup team. We talk about Keegan Bradley and Tom Hoagie and all these different guys. And Burns is somebody that you really want to see. We talked about Aaron Wise at the end of last year. Burns is somebody that you want to see like take hold of one of those bottom five spots or whatever. And he's been a little disappointing so far this year. But, you know, new driver, maybe turn it around. I don't know. We'll see.
The man pacing us is Ryan Brem. We'll hit on him real quick because one, he made a one. He made that on 17. It was a beauty. Had a lot of spin. Just hooped it right on in there. But we're entering kind of Michael Kim territory here. So Brem won the Puerto Rico Open last year. He then missed 9 of his next 10 cuts. And then coming into this event, he has missed 7 of his previous 8. So I don't know, file it under golf is weird part 9,000.
It's, I mean, his numbers are extraordinary too, because he doesn't gain in any category. It's really bad. Golf is weird and bizarre. I was actually watching the one, or I was watching PGA Tour Live when he made the one. Coach was on the call. Coach was yelling and
the
hollering,
coach.
And yeah, it was a TaylorMade moment for him. No pun intended. Ryan Brem is not a TaylorMade athlete, but yeah, I mean, do I think that this is a lead that's going to hold up? Probably not, but that's how golf goes sometimes. I mean, sometimes you make a one and you go on to win the tournament, even when you've missed 80 cuts in a row.
What would you rate those sunglasses he's wearing out of 10?
Well, he might be a little, I don't know how old Ryan Brem is. He might be a little old to be wearing those. Like those to me, when I see those sunglasses, all I think is Fernando Tatis Jr.
I can tell you how old he is.
What is he, like 36?
That's exactly what he is. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, or like Bo Bichette or something. I think young potential superstar baseball player. And I don't think Ryan Brim. They're sick, I mean, objectively, but I just don't know if they fit the player.
This is going to be very specific, but do you remember like a decade ago that Australian kid went viral because he like threw a massive party at his house and like the entire country was invited and a bunch of people showed up and then he went viral for it?
I don't remember this.
I feel like these are the sunglasses that guy would wear.
It wasn't Min Woo, was it?
I don't think so. We'll have to find that. I'll have to find that meme later. All right. So the afternoon wave headlines by Tommy Ladd. Tommy Fleetwood goes out in 33, offsets a pair of bogeys with a pair of birdies coming in. He is 3 under par. That is 68. So he will likely be 2 shots off the lead. Tommy was one of the favorites coming into this week, KP. So some decent expectations for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's got to win a PGA Tour event at some point. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, you know, European Tour doesn't count. Like, that's not what I'm saying. He's playing really good golf again, for the most part. He's playing good golf again. I don't want to say really good, because he's not playing necessarily better than Sam Burns, who I just said wasn't playing that great. But you want to see Fleetwood go out and win. You know, I watched most of his I had most of his first round on. I don't know that I watched most of it. It was on. I was glancing back and forth. But my takeaway from round one with him, Rick, he's just so much fun to watch play golf. There's guys out there that, you know, you watch him and you're like, I don't know, this is like, he's good, but he's like good and he's fun to watch, which is kind of a rare combo. So I would love to see Tommy Fleetwood get a win going into major season.
Yes, he is incredibly fun to watch. A couple of notables before we talk about the odds, if you want to hit on any of these guys, KP. So in it, 2 under, that's a 69, Adam Hadwin. Justin Thomas is also there. Ben Griffin, Davis Riley, just a couple of lurkers who are all very much still in the mix, because the scoring average today was, last time I checked, a shot and a half over par. Yeah, shot and a half over par.
Yeah. Yeah, I do want to talk about some of those guys, but let's do it in relation to the odds.
Okay, before we do that, producer Josh, share my screen, because thanks to the chat, we got Corey Worthington was the Aussie party kid. 9B Productions tells me that. So this is the kid that I think would wear those glasses. He threw a massive party. Let's see.
Yeah, that does not look like Min Woo Lee. So
no, but it also does not look like Ryan Brem.
It looks more like Hunter Mahan than either of those guys.
He was also, okay, so he is best known for holding a large house party that was reported worldwide. He threw a party whilst, that's how you know I'm on an Australian website, whilst his parents were interstate and soon spun out of control. Hundreds of rowdy teenagers were overflowing onto the streets, clashing with police. His interview went viral. He became an icon for teenage rebellion. He then made appearances on Australian Big Brother and Australian Ninja Warrior.
What a world.
Where else do you possibly get this level of analysis?
Who do you think he looks like? Does he look like Hunter Mahan?
Yeah. That's definitely that blonde over those Maybe blonde some, locks sticking out.
Some Charlie Hoffman in there.
Yeah, oh, that's good, Charlie Hoffman. All right, we will talk about those other guys, and we will do it in relation to the odds board. But first, we'll take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
And we're back. That was an adception. You were in that ad.
It's crazy. I'm everywhere.
That's sick. Congratulations.
It's awesome. Thank you.
Let's show the betting board. Thank you much. All right, here we go. Top of the board.
Wow.
Jordan Spieth, plus 550. He is, again, just for those tuning in, 4 under par. Shot off the lead. Steven Yeager currently tied for the lead, depending on what Adam Schenck does here in the next minute. Plus 850. Justin Thomas, who's 2 under, plus 850. Tommy Fleetwood, 3 under, plus 950. Mav McNeely, 67 today, 12-1. Sam Burns going for a three-peat, 12-1. Adam Hadwin at 15-1. That's the top of the board.
Yeah, I like JT. All right. I don't dislike JT. I like Burns at 12. I want to like Spieth. I don't think I do. Do you at that number?
Well, I had him before the tournament started. So
what was he like 12 or?
He was 12. Yes.
Okay.
So I this is so hard because if I didn't know anything and you just handed me the stat profile and these odds, I'd be like, there's no way Jordan Spieth wins this golf tournament. Or there's no way that this person that you handed me wins the golf tournament.
Right. But
the fact that I know it's Jordan Spieth and what he was before the tour, I'm just like, yeah, he might just gain 16 strokes putting this week. I don't know.
Well, I think this is totally. I think this is, we talked about this last week. Who was leading the Players Championship out of the first round?
Ramey.
Chad Ramey. And I said, I've never been more confident of that somebody's not going to win a golf tournament. I think this was his exact stat profile.
Yes, I feel that. Yes.
And so I think, I don't know, man. Like, I think you can talk yourself into superstars a lot easier. But I still, we talked about this again with Spieth last week at the Players. I don't really trust, do you trust him to hit it like really well for or like even decently well for 4 straight days. I just don't know that I do. Now the flip side of that is he doesn't have a ton of like heat around him. I mean, JT, Fleetwood, Burns, Hadwin's playing like kind of low key really well. I think Hadwin at 15 is fun.
Yeah, I don't mind Hadwin. The other sick one is I don't mind Tommy, who, you know, was great from tee to green, but now okay, so I'm going to bet the guy who has never won on the PGA Tour at plus 950. You know what I mean? Like, all of this feels kind of dirty.
Yeah. No, I agree. Is there anybody further down that – I mean, JT lost strokes putting, so he's interesting. But he didn't – I mean, he putted so bad at the Players' Championship.
He missed a – the second I turned him on this morning, he missed like a 3.5 footer. And I was like, oh, my God, here we go again.
You know – yeah, yeah. You know who's interesting? Akshay. I don't know what his number is. He was 1 under. I think he led the field in approach shots. He did lead the field in approach shots.
Wow. You want me to tell you what his number is? How about this? 125-1.
I'm in on that. Is he going to win? Probably not. But is there I think it should be shorter than that.
Only 4 shots off the lead.
Yeah. Give me Akshay at 125. Give me... Probably I would say Burns and Hadwin at 12 and 15.
Did I do something wrong here? Akshay. That's for this tournament that we're watching right now, right? Yeah, okay.
That's for like the US Open.
I know. I was double checking. No, that's for this one right now. Valspar Championship. Yep, that's what we're playing. Okay. All right. Cool. Anything else before we get out of here?
Last thing, just to follow up the ball discussion that we had on Tuesday. The takes are just... I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like,
what's your favorite one?
Well, the thing that I put on, and I think I said this, I basically said this on Tuesday, and then I put it out on Twitter after that, maybe Wednesday or something. But I said, there's so many branches to this conversation, and we should talk about all of them because it's a massive deal. It's a big deal. But essentially, it comes down to, do you want to go to St. Andrews anymore or do you not? Right? Like, if you want to boil it down to like why things are changing, it's, do you want to continue to go to St. Andrews for the next 50 years or do you not? And people, and the reaction to that that people have is, well, we can, you can still go to St. Andrews. And it's like, yeah, well, you could have a U.S. Open at a par three course too, if you, I mean, if you wanted, but not to go full Nick Saban, but is that what we want? Is that what we want golf to be? You know, and I just, I guess I'm confused by like such vitriolic pushback. Do people care about equipment and the ball like that much? Or is it just this idea of, you can't tell me what to do with my, first of all, nobody's telling you what to do. You're an amateur. But just the idea of like, I can't be told what to do by the authorities. Is that it?
I think it's partly raging against the machine, which is what you, yeah, what you're saying is I don't want to be told what to do by authorities. I also think that there's a weird delusion in America and most countries that everyone will eventually be a millionaire or a billionaire. So it's like people will vote, not to turn this into like a political thing, but
you didn't start it.
Here we
me.
Go. So they'll vote against their own interests because like they think one day they'll be a millionaire. And I think there is this weird, I know I'm an amateur, but I should be playing the same thing that they play. Because there is also there's also a lot of other examples from other sports of equipment being limited. I mean, equipment's limited right now, right? Like we just talked about Sam Burns's driver failing a test. Like there are limitations. I guess I don't know. What I don't know why this is so
it is weird. And I think there are, you know, I thought Greg had some interesting and decent points on Tuesday about, I can't remember what he was talking about, but like the idea of how do you, like, where do you cross over into using the ball or not using the ball in terms of like the NCAA and high level amateur golf? Like, I think those are talking points that are worth discussing, but just this idea of like, almost like writing for like a brand, like
I care about the corporate profits of TaylorMade.
Sort of like like sometimes I feel like people care more about a Acushnet than they do about the old course, and you're like, well, that's you can do that. It's a weird thing to sort of care about unless you're like JT, you have a vested interest in it. And even then it's kind of like Titleist isn't gonna it's a little bit like the long hitters are still going to be the long hitters, like the good ball makers are still going to be the good ball makers. I guess I'm a little bit, and maybe it's because I'm not deep in like the equipment game, I'm not a gearhead, none of that. I'm kind of on the outside looking in a little bit, and I just look at it and I'm like, I guess, like, what's the big deal? Like, why is everybody so like angry about this?
I think where I'm kind of circling is if we agree there's a distance problem, so that, which is maybe I shouldn't assume that we all agree that there's a distance problem.
I don't think everybody believes that. And I will say, if you because people cite the scores at the old course, oh, well, Tiger did this in 2000, Nick Faldo did this in 1992. Totally fair. To me, it's more of a, like a beauty, and I said this on Tuesday, a beauty and integrity of the game problem, where it's like, well, okay, in 2022, Cam Smith is hitting driver wedge, driver wedge, driver wedge. I doubt in 1992, Nick Faldo was hitting driver wedge, driver wedge, driver wedge. It's a different game. It's a different sport that you're kind of talking about there. So I don't know that it's a score or a distance problem as much as it is like a, what do we want golf to be a problem?
So if we can all agree that there is a distance problem and something has to be done, what are the real options? I think we all agree lengthening courses is not the best option. Mm-mm. Because it's expensive, it's never ending, it just becomes continue. It's impossible to keep up with, and there are courses that cannot expand and courses that we want to continue to go to. So then what other options do we have? Again, it's like things you can do to the golf course, make the rough thicker, put trees. I mean, there's problems with those too. I guess going straight to it's like going straight to the source. You either go to the club or you go to the ball or you go to the player. So what if they could, how could we limit players in some way? Make them wear those vests that Patty Harrington wears. Everybody's got to play in one of those. But seriously, like, I guess the ball's kind of the logical thing to do. Even if you don't like it, even if you don't agree with it, but we agree that something has to change, I think the ball's probably the right thing.
I mean, it's got to be the ball or the driver, right?
I think those are the only two options.
Or not just the driver, but the like face. Yeah, the club face. I don't know. I again, this happens all the time in other sports, right? I think what will be interesting, and this is where ankle weights.
There you go.
This is where I'm unsure, and I tweeted out a graphic on Tuesday, and it was true, but it might have been misleading. I don't know if producer Josh can pull that up, but I don't know if this is going to be helpful or harmful to the longest hitters. And I think that's where I actually, you know, I think it was Bryson said, like, this is unfair to people who have trained to generate club head speed, which if it benefits short hitters, I actually sort of agree with that. I just don't know that it benefits short hitters. I think at worst it's net neutral. Yeah. So here's the tweet. I basically took Rahm and Zach Johnson, and if you put them on a 450 yard hole and you reduce their swing speed or you reduce their distance by 10% each, the gap in strokes gained actually favors the longer hitter. So the increased gap in strokes gained is better for the longer hitter to be farther away at the same percentage, if that makes sense. I don't know if it does.
Yeah, it does. Why do you think this is misleading? Because it's using...
Well, it's misleading because not every hole is 450 yards. So Jake Nicklaus on Twitter said, like, on a 560 yard hole, actually the strokes gained is going to tilt toward the shorter hitter. Now the argument is there's probably more 450 yard holes than there are 560 yard holes. And so I think at worst, it's going to be net neutral for the longer hitter, but I do think that's a fair argument for like Rory and Rahm and these guys that have, like, that's part of their skill is like swing is like club head speed.
But also, if we're that deep into it at this point where the 450 yard holes are going to favor one side and the 560 yard holes are going to favor the other, we've done an okay job because that's already how it is, right? Like if you go to a golf course where all the par threes are 230 yards, who do you think that favors, right? Like, we're already there, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know. We could talk for an hour about this. We should probably let it go. But it's going to be interesting because I think the tour they were pretty tepid in their statement. You know, it wasn't like, oh yeah, we're going to implement this. It was like, we'll see, we'll see what happens. And then all of a sudden, and JT brought this up, you have you have two or three bodies implementing it and then two or three not.
It'll never work.
And then it's like, well, wait a second. I actually don't think that not having uniformity is, I think the only way to do it is to have uniformity. I think, right?
Yeah. Yes. There cannot be like, if you're an elite, because this is only supposed to be for elite golfers. If you are an elite golfer, if you are a PGA Tour player, if you are Xander Schauffele, you cannot play one ball 1 week at the PGA Championship and another ball the next week at a PGA Tour event. Like that would be insane. And it would be actually insane to ask them to do that.
It would be insane. also they would all show up. You're not missing the Masters because you have to play a Fred Ridley ball. You're not missing the US Open because you have to play a Mike Wan ball, right? But I almost feel like it would make the USGA look. The people already hate the USGA, which is sometimes fair, but mostly unfair. It would make them look kind of silly. And even though I think they would be kind of in the right, I just don't know if that I don't know if that would work.
It would be the same idea of taking your ball and going home, but it would be giving you the ball and making you use it. But it's the same. Everyone else gets the same feeling about it.
Well, this is where the PGA Tour actually is kind of like, we're about to find out if, you know, they might take like a heat check and be like, actually, we're gonna flex our power a little bit because we're kind of feeling ourselves from having batted away live mostly. And I think that part of it is I'm fascinated by power. And I think the power between the five organizations, it's kind of always moving around. The tour, I would say, has not normally had a lot of it. But now that they've kind of conglomerated with the big dogs, it feels a little different, right?
Yeah, especially because they weren't the first to move on this, and now they almost get to be the swing vote, right? It's almost like oh, we're locked at 2-2. We need a swing vote here, and they get to be that swing vote.
Yeah, and I think because I think Augusta is going to be with the USGA and RNA. I would be shocked if Fred Ridley came out in his presser on Wednesday of the Masters and said anything other than we support the USGA and RNA and we're going to stand with it. I don't know what the wording he'll use is. But then other than that, PGA Tour, PGA of America. I don't know. Jeff Shackelford had some good stuff in his newsletter. People should go read it about all of this today. It was that and the fried egg are pretty deep on this stuff in ways that Rick Rungood and Kyle Porter are probably not, but we still enjoy talking about it.
What about removing the yardages from the sprinkler heads and they have to now eyeball yardages?
That'd be sick.
How sick would that be?
I'm in favor of anything like that.
Just like, guess. That's what we did in high school. I just like guessed numbers. I don't know. I could, even if you gave me a sprinkler head, I couldn't have walked it off.
Do you know how much weight Groer would, he'd be like 100 pounds because Spieth would make him walk every yardage off.
He'd be on the tee box and he'd say, walk down to that fairway bunker and see how far it is.
He would get like 900,000 steps in a tournament. It'd be absurd.
All right. We will be back after round 2, 3, and 4 of the Valspar, see how this whole thing shakes out. For now, big thanks, producer Josh, doing all the hard work behind the scenes. KP, available on Twitter at Kyle Porter, CBS, and you can find me at Rick Rungood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.